Okay, so now we're going to have our three panel speakers go up to the table, and we'll open up the session for discussion. If anybody has questions or comments that they'd like to share.
And I think the other effort where we're concentrating is the message. I just find I need to let the public know that there's going to be change. The forests are going to look different. They're going to look kind of red and dead for a while, and then they're going to be more open, and then other things are going to come in. And we might in the future be able to control a certain amount of that, but we also are going to need to expect the forest to look different and then start making management decisions on where do we put trails and how do we manage activities in these changed forests.
I have one more thing to add. And also, if it turns out that we are going to lose the majority of our cannabis, for example, then there may be a different ecological state that's more desirable than another alternative, and there may be a way to nudge it in that direction. And so that's another long-term management option that there's not much known about. I'd love to get some, you know, research going on something like that, but right now that's a big open question and potentially something that we could work on in the long term.
Yeah. Okay, Cindy, I have another question. On your slide, you have the pollination study listed, but you didn't tell about it.
Oh, could you
tell? I was watching my time. So as part of the TANO resistance study, not only are we looking for resistant TANOs, but there's a whole group of researchers involved with that. We need to understand the genetics of TANOs. And what was a surprise to me is that there's not a lot known about TANOs because basically they've been considered a junk tree. So if we find resistant TANOs in one part of the state, do we use them in another part of the state? You got to understand the genetics. And then to understand the genetics, you got to understand how they pollinate. And I was again surprised to realize that there's not a lot known about what pollinates TANOs. Is it wind? Is it insects? Is it both? So as these questions came up, while I'm sitting in the corner of a bunch of academic researchers, I said, I can help. So we have a really core group of volunteers. I found a team of them that were out last summer just making observations of what insects were visiting the TANOs. So we did find some insects that seem to be visiting them regularly. We don't know for sure that they're pollinating them. We may be doing that again this summer. I think we probably will be. So it's contributing to basic science regarding TANOs. And the other thing, again, it was something that people could do. Some of these decisions are based on knowledge, and some of them are based on emotions, or actually it's both. And it's important to keep the public out there involved and recognize that they have feelings. And in this case, we had some very dedicated docents who wanted to do something, and this was a great something for them to contribute.
Richard, this.
One of the things I was struck by with China Camp, having not been there for a couple of years, if you don't know it every day, sometimes you can see the change, sometimes you can't see the change. There's a lot of green out there. Are you guys putting in, from a tourist or a visitor's point of view, those kind of permanent photo monitoring stations, both to document your own projects, your own management, as well as to document what the alternatives are, what this landscape may change to be, what its trajectory is, and you know, kind of giving them some frame of reference so that they can interpret this stuff over time.
Well, we do have some vegetation monitoring locations where we are doing photo monitoring as well as relevant and that sort of thing. Maybe not at the glance, you know, like looking at from a distance, but definitely some up-close plots where we're doing pretty intensive monitoring. But in terms of what you communicate to the public, a lot of it might have to be interpreted. So maybe we should add that in. That's a good idea.
So we don't officially have anything like that. The first location that I identified, I personally, when I joined the district 10 years ago, said no debt. I took a photograph with a ranger standing next to it. And I've been back there on a regular two-year basis. And what I realized recently is one of, there's a camp, the first tree that died was coastline oak, and then another coastline oak. And there's a huge canyon oak in the background of those original photos. It's now all brown. And so I'll have another photo of it being dead. So that's been kind of incidental, but it really does strike me through the years, things that you didn't think were going to disappear out of the picture or don't. And then these three large, this will definitely be a photo monitoring point. If these trees are gone one day, you might not notice it if you had never been there before. And it might just look like an open canopy forest. But they're, you know, I need to have a person in here for scale, but they're huge. So this will definitely be a photo monitoring point. I hope we don't lose them.
And I would say, the caregivers being part of the work that has started, again, very small scale, it certainly lends itself to doing the photo monitoring, so thank you for that reminder. And Candy Woods, maybe a broader scale, and since we haven't done any work there yet, it would be good to start that process. But one thing I wanted to say about interpretation, which I think is really important, we are requesting funding to put in some interpretive panels specific to the project. And it's interesting because when we removed the tan oaks in this particular campsite area, the rangers were saying, oh, this is devastating. These are favorite campsites. People love camping under these oaks. This is going to be a real problem. After the oaks came out, we did some kind of quick campsite spurs as we could. It's now a sunny spot in a cold coastal park, and so there are people who really love camping there. I'm sure there are also people who are sad that their favorite oak campsites have gone away. So I think, again, that sort of documentation, but just as importantly, the interpretation to the public as to why these changes have occurred and what does this mean, and thank you for that reminder.
This question may be mostly for you, Renee, since you work for California Department, but it might be too, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but one of the things that the work and folks have had to deal with is regulations that might constrain management because they're intended to protect other resources, like listed species.
Sure.
And so I'm wondering, just as a manager, how do you feel about that conflict between protecting a larger landscape and those possible constraints, especially since you work with a lot of older and redwood?
Yes, I sort of approach it as any other project. You know, we're bombarded with this, bombarded with this trying to do the balancing act in state parks, the recreation versus the preservation. And I just sort of see this as one more element of management. I think there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. I think it really is site-specific. I think it is very important to address the endangered species issues, and maybe a management strategy you would use in one area, you wouldn't use in another because of the sensitivities. And really, it gets down to the level of the environmental review and documentation and approval you want to go through. Because if you do have tape, you're getting into an EIR, habitat conservation plan, do we really want to do that? And maybe not just state parks doing that, but I think that would be more of a regional decision, which maybe involves getting the regulatory agency folks involved, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game. So that really is a good question, and I think it's something we do need to consider on a broader basis.
Okay, it is 3:20, so I'm going to go ahead and thank our panelists. Thank you, Renee, Ellen, and Steve. It's break time, and we need to reconvene at 3:35. Thanks.